You are listening to Sounds Good, a podcast brought to you by Choirmate.
You are listening to Sounds Good, a podcast from Choirmate. My name is Diveke Kuløy, and I am here today with Thomas Kaplan. Hi, Thomas.
Hi, Diveke.
Thomas, you won the award for Conductor of the Year from the Norwegian Choir Council. You have been appointed Conductor of the Year by the Norwegian Conductors Association. You've been on the board for Norway in World Choir Council. You've been on the board for the project Conductors Without Borders. You're a conductor. You do workshops. You travel around and you have your own choirs. I am so happy to have you as a guest on the podcast.
Yeah, I can't imagine that I have time, but obviously I have. I'm very happy to be here with you.
How many hours is there in a normal Thomas Kaplan day?
Oh, well, normally I was born with about 28 hours a day.
That makes sense.
Yes, yes. So I was kind of privileged and lucky with that, yeah.
We're going to talk about you a little bit, but we're also going to talk about one of the things that is something that you are really passionate about and talk about a lot, and that is what the difference between a choir leader and a conductor. And I think we'll have some helpful tips and viewpoints for our listeners. But we can't get around the interesting projects that you have been and are involved in. For example, World Choir Council. It no longer exists, I think.
Oh, yes, it does. Yes, yeah.
Sorry, no, I mean the Conductors Without Borders doesn't exist.
Yes, it does exist.
But you've been on the board for World Choir Council, and you started the project Conductors Without Borders. What was that? What is that? What did you want to do with that?
I was invited to by the IFCM to do this because they were looking for people, pioneers, who would like to assist in building up a new function within the IFCM. And this was that they wanted to reach out to conductors in areas of the world that normally don't have access to literature, to teaching, to mentorship, anything. So, and they, of course, in order to try to help them and assist them in their development, they wanted to create this new function, Conductors Without Borders. And I submitted a proposal for how this could be done, and then I was suddenly invited to Caracas, Venezuela, for this first inaugural meeting. Yes.
And what countries did you want to reach out to with the Conductors Without Borders?
Well, it's mainly those countries who don't have, for example, a normal conductor's training. We can talk about Indonesia, for example, where there are so many choirs. And that's one area in Asia, in Africa, of course. There are many countries that don't have formal education for conductors. So what can they do? How are they supposed to develop? So these are typical areas that we wanted to reach out to.
And why was this such a passion for you?
Well, I've kind of always been interested in helping. And I mean, being a teacher or a conductor is about how can I help you? It's not about what they can do for me. So that's kind of the perspective that I'm there for them. And since I am privileged enough to be working at a university where I can do this, to be able to help and assist others, that has always been a thing for me, that when I see people who need help and assistance, I just feel I have to do something about that. I have to do whatever I can.
And my head is a little tired, so I'm going to say reasonably. Recently, you got in touch with a Ukrainian conductor. She's actually here in the room with us. Her name is Oksana Suketska, and she's your guest because we're actually at the yearly choir conductors conference that Fonoko does every year. How did you get in touch with Oksana, and why is Ukraine such a passion project for you?
Well, obviously, Ukraine is under a lot of pressure and strain at the moment, and a lot of things and functions can't work. Choirs can't work, and conductors can't work. So it's really a bad situation there. So whatever I can do, and I got in touch with Oksana through we started out in the same international network building for conductors around the world, and this was. And then I saw Oksana there in the screen, in the Zoom screen, and I thought, yeah, either I could, since I wanted to help out, I could either buy maybe a Kalashnikov at an eBay secondhand eBay and go down and fight at the front. But then I thought again, no, Thomas, you are too old for this. This is not what you should do. You should try to help out with your spirit and your knowledge and your and just your will to share passionately to other people and use that instead. So that's why I've kind of been trying to motivate and inspire Oksana, since she's one of the brave people who stayed behind and didn't leave the country. And she will be unbelievably important in the rebuilding of Ukraine choir life.
And how can you help in a situation like that?
Well, it's just by reaching out and having Zoom meetings and messages every now and then, how are you today, and things like that. You know, just to every person has a need to be seen and be heard, that there is someone out there that sees you and hears you. And that's kind of a fundamental need for us as human beings. And I could do that. I was in a position I could do that. And it interests me because I want to learn as well about Ukrainian choir life and pedagogy and see how we can hopefully maybe interact with one another in the future.
Now, the Conductors Without Borders project no longer exists, but I've heard rumors from you that you're working on a similar and new project. Could you talk a little bit
about that? Conductors Without Borders, they still exist, and they have actually been reinitiated now again, very recently, so I understand why you haven't really heard about it.
Bad research.
Yeah, no, but they are really, ISIM is again trying to reach out and find ways of reaching out to conductors as they did many years ago, but I'm involved in the process of building up a new international network for conductors. It's going to be called it is called World Choral Conducting Network, and that we're just in the process of launching website on this, so it's very new.
And how can people join this new project?
Well, that will be through finding us on the web and finding the web page and go into this. I mean, our function is just to try to, again, help and facilitate growth, development with the conductor who wants to be inspired. They can walk down this road of a possibility road, and they can choose different houses they want to go into and meet the caretakers there, and they will the possibility to be part of webinars or even mentorship training over longer periods and stuff like that.
We will put the contact information and any other information you might have in our show notes. So if you who are listening want to join Thomas in reaching other conductors across the world, you can find the information you need in our show notes. But you are not only an international conducting networking superstar, Thomas. You're also a very, very good both classical and rhythmical conductor. And we've talked a little bit about, before we started this episode, we talked about that you see a difference between being a conductor in the traditional sense and a choir leader. What is the biggest difference between being a conductor and a choir leader, in your opinion?
Well, that could be possibly expressed in many ways, but I think one significant importance is that when you talk about the conductor, it's about the person, the conductor, the professional. But when you talk about the choir leader, the leadership function, it is about who you are actually leading, the persons behind it. And I think the biggest and most important communication goes on. It's not between the professional conductor and the professional singer, but it's between the human being behind the conductor and the human being behind the singer. And that's where we normally meet and should meet. And I think, choir leadership is about all the different hats you need to be able to wear as a conductor, ranging from everything from psychology, sociology, vocal technique, of course, methodology, pedagogy. I mean, it's such a wide spectrum of competencies that you're expected to master. And conducting is, in its normal sense, more related to the physical fact, what you're doing with your arms in front of the choir, which normally is the smallest part of activity you do with the choir.
So let's dive into that a little bit more, because I'm thinking, when you say wearing all the hats, you know, the sociology and the psychology and the pedagogy and all of that, being a conductor, like waving your arms and being the one who says, no, you made a mistake, or this isn't good enough, or this could be better, that's a very, should we say, old-fashioned hierarchy way of running any group, really, right? Also including choirs or ballet companies or what have you. You have a youth choir in Hamar, Norway, called Defrost. Mm. I saw you last year at the last conference in that Fonoco did. I thought the mood in the choir was very unique. And I thought, if I ever get to talk to Thomas, just the two of us, I'm going to ask him, what kind of structure do you have in the choir? What is the hierarchy like in Defrost?
Well, I think, first of all, I mean, the word respect is very important to everyone who's working in this rehearsal room. The respect laterally between the singers, and also the respect from me to the singers and from them to me. There's kind of never a discussion of the authority, who is the authority. But then again, it's not about me. It is about how I can release their creativity and their willingness to take part and in this building process of the choir, socially, musically, and humanly, in the choir, and so I think they feel that they get respect from me by giving them the room to do so, to be themselves, that in itself also means that they give me respect back. They show me respect, that I show them respect, and I think that process must come from the conductor, from the choir leader, that you see them and you give them the room to develop.
Yeah, because respect should not be interchanged with fear. Let's make no mistake. Fearing the conductor or being scared of making a mistake is not the same as respecting your conductor or choir leader.
No, definitely not. And management by fear is, as you say, the traditional way of doing things. But I can see when I meet colleagues around the world, I can feel and I can see and I can hear it that people are really, this is an international change going on. There is a big change going on in leadership. And Esa-Pekka Salonen is one of those really, really fantastic conductors today who says the same thing. He says said just recently that there was a time in my life as a conductor when I felt that I was important. And then he said, and if I didn't feel important, I had to do something in order to kind of feel important. Mm. But then this viola player in Los Angeles orchestra told him, you know, Esa-Pekka, maestro, we are like a horse. We run, but we know how to find home. You don't have to kick us in order to find our way home. But if we meet an obstacle, we need to jump over it. We need to feel your trust, that you trust us. If you trust us, then we'll jump.
It's, you know, as a choir conductor, both you and I are choir conductors, and most choir leaders or conductors or choir singers encounter a lot of the same problems no matter what choir you're in. So, for example, the thing you're saying about the horse analogy, right? Sometimes as a choir leader, you feel like you're pulling people through rehearsal by the hairs in their nose. You know, you're really, you have to force them, you know, have to say, you have to remember to practice at home. You have to be here on time. You've been away for three rehearsals now. That's too much. Are you practicing? Like, what's going on in your life? And you still maybe feel like you can't motivate them. And sometimes singers get unmotivated. Maybe singers listening to us right now are thinking, but it doesn't matter if I practice at home because the rest of my voice group doesn't do that. And a lot of people are missing from rehearsals and only show up every three rehearsals. So why should I show up? How would you solve problems like this? If we take the attendance first, because I know you have very good attendance in Defrost. Mm. How do you make that happen?
Well, I think it's nothing we have done directly in order to do this, because we just kind of created this environment that they want to be there. They are there because they want to. If they don't want to be there, then they can be somewhere else, of course. But they want to be there. And the same thing, it's all about what they want. And if there is a crescendo in the music, I don't want them to do that because the composer put it there. I don't want them to do it because I say so. I want them to do it because they want to do it. It's about ownership. And I think they feel that they own the choir, that they're actually co-owners of the choir, that it's their individual responsibility, what happens with the choir. And that we have succeeded in creating this feeling in the choir. And, for example, I say to them, you're never allowed to speak on behalf of anyone else in the choir. If you, as an alto, feel that you're not singing correctly, then you can't say, I think we altos are not singing correctly. And I just look at her and I say, can you rephrase that, please? And then she says, I don't think I sing correctly here. And then you will see the other alto say, oh, me too, yeah. And that's quite a different approach, that they take individual responsibility and they can do so and they want to do so because they feel they own the choir.
And how, you know, people have busy lives. A lot, or maybe most of the choirs around are volunteers who do this as a hobby. They have lots of other things going on. Maybe some people have kids in your choir. Maybe some people have football practices or other hobbies. How do you proceed to make sure that the choir is the one thing they prioritize and the most important thing to
yeah,
do
I think,
outside of work and school?
Well, first of all, I mean, it's a question of also creating a status, and that there are different ways of doing that. One way is to say that if you practice twice or three times football in the week, then you can also do that singing in a choir. So most of these singers, I would say almost 100%, they do not have other hobby activities. They are totally focused on singing in Defrost, and they come every twice these rehearsals, and the attendance is very, very good. That's because they don't do anything else, but also they feel that what I'm doing with this choir is equally important as if I would be playing football.
It gives just as much status.
Yes, and yeah. It doesn't, and they use as much time as well. Mm. And that gives status to their activity.
I met a young person here at the conference, actually, who was wearing a Defrost ring and proudly said, you know, he was a part of Defrost. And he is here now as a conductor. Mm. How do you think your type of choir leadership inspires your singers to pursue conducting?
I think it inspires them quite a lot. I think they're fascinated, they're intrigued by the way how you can lead a choir. And I think when I was so proud of watching him lead the choir, conducting here, because the way he was talking, the way they were talking to the choir was in a very positive, creative, inviting, involving way of doing things. So they've obviously picked up some techniques, pedagogical, methodological techniques that they've learned from this. So I think, yeah, and this is what it's all about. We're not really building people for the choir. We are building people for the big society, that they can go out, whether they sing in a choir or not, wherever they end up, in a workplace or anything, that they can actually contribute very positively to the building of that particular community.
In your opinion, what's the most common problem choirs encounter?
Ooh, yes, I think that is it could be so many things, but I think one of the things could be that they think of the choir, at least here in Norway, as something you do whenever you have time for it or whenever you want to do it, you know. And it's kind of that they don't prioritize equally, and that they don't lift up this activity as important as it is. They don't understand how important it is for them. I think that could be one of the big, at least here in Norway.
How could we change that?
Yeah, well, I think one easy thing could be to actually just add to another rehearsal in the week, because then suddenly it's more important. It takes up two days in your week, but I've tried that here in Norway, and every time we try that, I say, oh, no, I don't have time for that. But they do. Of course they do. And if they can do it in Latvia. They can have two, three times per week, all choirs more or less. That's just how things are. They wouldn't accept anything else. So we just need to change. If we can change that, then a lot of things would happen.
What would you say is your most important experience as a choir leader?
Well, in the long run, that must have been when I experienced my psychological shift. When I, around 2004, discovered that what I was doing in front of a choir really wasn't about me, but it was about the singers, it was about the choir, it was about the human beings in the choir. And that was, of course, a great shift in my life and changed my methodology, pedagogy and everything. So that must have been the most important moment, I think.
So the choir is the most important thing, not the choir leader or conductor?
Definitely not so. No, I mean, our job is just to facilitate. We are facilitators. We are frame workers. We construct frames in which they can work and paint and sculpt. Sorry. That's our important job. We are like gardeners. And we have in our garden, we have different plants of different kind. And some need a lot of more water, some need little water, some not need a lot of sun, and some flowers need not so much sun. They need to stand in the shade. And as a choir leader, you have to see all these plants and carefully give them what they need in order for them to grow to become what they are supposed to be.
No garden, no gardener needed. No choirs, no choir leaders needed.
Exactly.
You have heard Sounds Good, a podcast brought to you by ChoirMate. You have heard Sounds Good, a podcast brought to you by Choirmate.